It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President Dr. John Jasinski. Each month, Dr. Jasinski will visit with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Underwriting for All Things Northwest comes from Nottoway County Economic Development and Northwest Missouri Regional Council of Governments. More at facebook.com/NWMORCOG. And now, the 10th president of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. John Jasinski.
Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest, a show devoted to all the good people, places, events, and stories of our region. We highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration, and the developments throughout our region. And please know there is much to celebrate regarding Northwest Missouri, Southwest Iowa, Southeast Nebraska, and Northeast Kansas. I am pleased to welcome today Drs. Jenny Wall and Michael Rogers, faculty members at Northwest Missouri State University. They'll be discussing math education and will also visit us about an exciting iPad application they have developed for young math learners. Additionally, we'll be joined by Nancy Greeley, superintendent at West Nottoway School District, and Nissa Ingraham, professor at Northwest Missouri State University. The pair will discuss educational issues of the day. Thanks for joining All Things Northwest, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition. To begin this month's program, I welcome Dr. Jenny Wall and Dr. Michael Rogers. Jenny's a Bearcat, having earned her bachelor's in Spanish and master's in education degrees from Northwest, along with her doctoral degree from the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Her master's and doctoral degrees are based in math education. She focuses on elementary teacher preparation. I should mention that her husband also teaches at Northwest as an alumnus, and they've got two beautiful, intelligent daughters, she'll say, and they're also going to be Bearcats. Michael is an assistant professor in mathematics, computer science, and information systems. He is interested in all aspects of computer science, particularly enjoys teaching mobile computing and doing operating system development. His outside interests include astronomy, aviation, and travel. Jenny and Michael, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, let's first talk about what's happening nationally and really internationally. We hear about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. I know that most of the meetings I go to, and they're talking about the future and what our gap areas are in the U.S., it's STEM education. Part of STEM, obviously, is mathematics. What do you guys see out there with regard to why we have this huge gap area in the STEM discipline?
To help prepare our students for not only using the technologies that are out there, because they're pretty adept at using the technologies, but maybe getting them ready to help develop more technologies in the future. And so they need to have a great educational foundation in all those areas of STEM in order to help prepare them to be leaders in those areas.
And do you feel, Jenny, that just maybe in the last 5, 10, 20, 25 years, we just haven't provided those opportunities?
We are recognizing the need to continue to provide those opportunities and maybe make sure the focus is really out there so students are seeing the need to be involved in the STEM areas more. There's been a kind of an evolution of mathematics education that's continued since the beginning of mathematics education, but we're kind of coming to that period of really focusing on helping develop conceptual understandings and understanding concepts, not just drill and skill that was so popular in the 80s, but really getting more towards that conceptual understanding nowadays.
Okay, and Michael, your focus or your perspective on the STEM education and how we got to this point?
Right, so in computer science, we've been lobbying. We wanted STEM to be known as C-STEM, but that didn't go over too well. But we recognize that there's a huge problem with, if you look in the high schools and you look at the disciplines that people are studying, math at least has a presence in the high schools, whereas computer science is virtually not there at all. And so there are a lot of organizations working right now to try and get computer science into the high schools, but it's sort of a hard slog.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned C-STEM and including computer science. I've also heard STEM-H, which would include health. So no matter how you cut this thing, science, technology, engineering, math, and everything in between are all very important. So let's talk about math and math education and what you two are doing here. Bottom line is, as you look at math learners of today, and Jenny, you mentioned the drill and skill of the 80s, or perhaps in my time, well before the 80s. And for our listeners, you know, you think about all of us and how we learned math. How are learners adapting today, and what's going on in the classroom that might be different than perhaps when the listeners or perhaps when I went through an educational experience?
Well, research is really showing that it helps when students develop their own understanding. So it's becoming more of a student-centered classroom instead of the image of a teacher standing up front pouring knowledge into the students' brains. We're really working on trying to help students develop their own understanding. And so having the teacher set up learning environments where they're exploring, manipulating, evaluating different scenarios in order to develop their own understanding and get the concepts. And when they create that knowledge on their own, it stays in there better. Instead of, if I give you a formula and tell you to memorize this after the test is over, there goes that formula.
That's a natural transition then to talking about what you two have developed over a period of time called fruit plate math. And for our listeners, could you guys kind of talk about what specifically fruit plate math is, but also how the idea come about and what does it mean?
Well, if you go grab an iPad that maybe is at a school right now, you'll find that there are all sorts of great apps that are on that iPad, many of which are educational and perfectly great. However, some of them could just be replaced with flashcards. They're essentially just fancy flashcards. They're helping students with memorizing information, just drill and skill. Let's practice what we already know.
And if I can, Jenny, real quick, for our listeners' sake, when we're talking about an iPad app, maybe not everybody has that working knowledge, but really it's if you think about a device in front of you and being able to click on a little icon that would take you to, and you're, as you just said, flashcards as an example, electronically. So that's kind of conceptually what you're talking about.
Right, and a lot of those are kind of used for just practicing things they already know. But what we wanted to do was create something that the students could actually learn something from, not just practice something they already had learned previously. So it's really interactive to help them understand multiplication or even properties of multiplication like commutative property, distributive property that they might get into later on down the road, but now they can actually visualize it and conceptualize it before just seeing some formula on the board.
And so how did this come about, Michael? You guys talked one day over coffee and said, great idea, or what happened?
This was Jenny's brainchild. She said she wanted an app that could, you know, and then went ahead and described all the things that she thought it could do. And we talked briefly about whether I should do it or whether I should find some students to do it. And it sounded challenging enough and fun enough that I decided to sort of, you know, try and do it myself. And so we just started collaborating.
And as you talk about the collaboration, Jenny, you had this brainchild of fruit plate math. But obviously you were seeing something in teaching realm of students not connecting up or, you know, flashcards not being enough. You talked about the visual side of fruit plate math. So I've thrown that out for our listeners. Describe fruit plate math from a visual point of view.
Well, I do have to say that all of us in the math education, Cheryl Malm, Christine Benson, and I have always talked about how we really need to help our students develop this understanding. So we recognize the need for these iPads, specifically at Horace Mann. Do they help our students really explore what they can learn, or do they help them just practice their basic facts?
So take me through. Listeners, you'll have to kind of watch in your mind's eye here, but Jenny, take me through the app on your iPad here. Literally, it's a plate, and it has some fruit here. I see a banana, an orange, and an apple, right?
Yep, there's a slider in one of the corners that says plates, and so you can change the number of plates that you have on your screen. And then there's another slider for fruits, and you can slide that and change the number of fruits. So if a teacher asks their students, if you have three plates and five apples on each plate, the students can put three plates out there and five apples on each plate, and then see how many apples they have total.
And so visually they can associate with apples or bananas or oranges, but also understand, like you said, addition, multiplication, whatever the case may be.
Which really could be done with actual blocks and manipulative students have in the classroom. But what is really great about the iPad is now let's say we want our students to not just recognize the three plates, but instead we want our students to also get the idea that this is three equal groups of five, which maybe could then be changed to what a lot of teachers then teach as the array model. And so in the array model, we have three rows, one row for each plate, and then five columns, one column for each fruit on the plate. And so we have three rows of five apples. Or we can even relate this to area of a rectangle now. The area of this rectangle that was created is 15. And you can't really do that with the actual manipulatives in front of you. You can't go back and forth between the plates and the array model as easily. And that's the great nature of the app that Michael created.
And so, listeners, you're listening to All Things Northwest on KXEV KRNW. We're talking to Dr. Jenny Wall and Dr. Michael Rogers today about math education, and more specifically their iPad app that they developed called Fruit Plate Math. And listeners, I just saw something very visually appealing, but also I thought what Jenny just did was to go between basically learning objectives and be able to kind of slide back and forth and have a teacher show a student a variety of different learning objectives. Michael, so Jenny comes to you with this idea. Does she talk fruit? Does she talk plates? How do you kind of conceptualize this from an app development perspective?
Well, Jenny was sort of an unusually good client to work with in that she came in with pretty much a fully sketched idea of what she wanted to do. She said, I want this to look like this. I want this to look like that. We sort of went back and forth to a certain extent, and so she would have some ideas. I would make sort of a beta version of the app and then send it out to her, and she'd say, no, I don't want this, I want this, and you have the following bugs, and then she would go ahead and identify them, and so we sort of collaborated in that sense. But
so perhaps for me, I don't know about for our listeners, but for the novice, how does one go about developing an app like this? What's your approach?
Well, the first thing is to definitely get a good set of user requirements so you fully understand what it is that the person wants to do. And then I just sit down and fire up a program called Xcode and start thinking a lot. And the coding process, the programming process, is particularly interesting here because, maybe not ironically, there's a tremendous amount of math that goes into this. All the animations that you're seeing, there aren't a whole lot of tools that sort of support it, so I had to figure them out from first principles, which was a very pleasurable experience.
And Michael, what was the hardest part of developing this app?
Well, you know, I ran into several different bugs that would only be of interest to other programmers. But, for instance, one that was particularly enjoyable was the fact that in one of the views, we have a number of plates, and we have them stacked on top of one another. And I would stack all the plates. It looks like there's simply one plate, and you're dragging plates from one location. But in fact, there are a whole bunch of plates stacked on top of one another. And when I stacked them there, it turned out that there was some sort of a drawing artifact that was making it not look right. And I had to figure out what was going on, and it took some quality time with Google and asking a lot of people before I understood what was going on and fixed it.
And Jenny, is this being used right now? Is it successful, or is it just another tool on an iPad app that you know, I can take and say, gosh, it looks good, but is it really doing what it was intended?
Well, Heidi Beatty taught at Horace Mann last year, and we took the app over there and used it with her students, and we still had some bugs at that time, and the students had loads of fun trying to find all of our different glitches in there. But just last week I talked to her, and her students at Northeast Nottoway, where she teaches now, have been using this in the classroom, and she said it's amazing how quickly they have jumped on and understood, and they're ready to move to the distributive property, which we often don't think of as being something that you learn until higher levels in math, but actually we can teach it at third grade level now as required in the Common Core.
So Jenny, where do you think, where do you see this headed in terms of, you know, use classroom at Northeast Nottoway or, say, at Horace Mann? What's next?
Well, I'm kind of a sales and trends junkie. There's a place that you can go on the Apple website to see how often it's downloaded or where it's downloaded, and I check there often and see that it's over 700 downloads in over 20 countries. And so it's obviously going places and being used in a lot of places. In classrooms, I've talked to homeschool teachers that are using it with their children, and just elementary classrooms all around have been using it.
So let me ask that. You mentioned that the apps, you went to the Apple, you know, the App Store. How does one get an app on the Apple Store?
Well, basically, you have to go through a whole lot of hoops with Apple in order to get it approved. And we write the app. We create all the artwork for it. We set up a website because every app needs to have sort of a website behind it. The person submitting the app has to be an iOS developer, which is not particularly difficult to achieve. And then we go ahead and submit it, and we wait and we hope that Apple will see fit to approve, as they did in this case.
So are you out there marketing it to Apple, or are you just kind of waiting for them to hit it?
Well, we basically submit it to the store, and then whoever it is at Apple takes a look at the app, decides that it's, you know, of high enough quality that they'll let it into the store, because they do check things like this, and then it just becomes another offering on the store.
Okay, so it's on the App Store. We're very proud of that, proud of you guys for doing it. Jenny, you mentioned that, you know, it's been downloaded over 700 times. I caught a glimpse of, hey, you've got more than one idea. I want to be clear for our listeners. Fruit Plate Math is for what grade learners?
It's specifically for third grade when multiplication is being taught. However, my three-year-old likes to use it for counting, just practicing counting. So we can use it at all sorts of ages, but mainly third grade would be the focus.
And then do you see Fruit Plate Math being able to be extrapolated to fifth grade math and seventh grade math and 12th grade math?
If you think about maybe an algebra class, you probably the first time you heard the term distributive property, when you learn about that using X's and Y's and such, if you were to learn about it with numbers instead of with variables, it would probably have more meaning to you and understanding. So we can teach or reintroduce that concept using this at the higher level, because they can see how 3 times 4 plus 5 is the same thing as doing the multiplication of 3 times 4 plus 3 times 5.
You bet. And Michael, as you think about your development process with Jenny, you know, what was the most enjoyable piece out of that, you know, even today as you hear about learners going through the app process?
Well, Ida, there were a number of highlights for me. One of them was when we brought it to Horseman and we were testing it in the classroom, and all of the students were ecstatic because they were finding bugs that I would have to fix. that was enjoyable. And I really think, you know, I teach students.
These are third graders.
These are third graders.
Okay.
And they were perfect. They loved the bugs. They were like, oh, look, I can make it do this and I can make it do that. I think for me, the most enjoyable thing was the fact that I teach students how to do this, but I rarely have time to develop apps myself. You know, I'll have written, you know, thousands and thousands of lines of code that I'm doing in the classroom and I'm showing students how to do, and they're getting their apps into the store. And I don't have an opportunity, because when I have an idea, I've got too many other things going on. But having Jenny play the role of an external client, it's like now I really have a responsibility, and I can't just say, oh, I'll get to it later, because somebody else is applying just the teeniest bit of pressure. And so it let me walk through the entire process just the way the students work when they're out there in the workforce and they're working with clients.
That's great. Well, Jenny and Michael, can you guys give our listeners a glimpse? If they have interest and want to go check this out for themselves or for their sons, daughters, grandsons, granddaughters, nieces, nephews, what should they do?
Just wander over to the App Store and just type in Fruit Plate Math, 3 words, and do a search, and it should show up right off the bat.
And it's a free download.
All right. Well, I encourage our listeners to do that. I have the app right in front of me, and it's very, very exciting. And Dr. Michael Rogers, Dr. Jenny Wall, what you guys have done here is very important on a variety of levels, not just for, say, Northwest Missouri State University and hands-on learning and applications in the classrooms at Horace Mann and within our region, but really understanding the importance of that STEM education that we talked about, and the importance of getting learners visually ready and not just going through that, you know, that rote memorization, but really embracing science, technology, engineering, and math. And so I salute you both for your work and making learning not just fun, but also really that hands-on piece that's so very important. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll be talking about educational issues of the day. We'll talk with Nancy Greeley. She's the superintendent at West Onaway School District. And Nissa Ingraham, professor at Northwest Missouri State University. You're listening to All Things Northwest.
Northwest Missouri State University accepts students from all over the world. Sophomore sports, recreation, and therapeutic major Freya Flindell came from London, England.
I just wanted to come to a campus that was small and had a proper student environment, and that was really friendly, and I found that at Northwest. So I actually applied to go to Nebraska, Omaha, and University in California, so I did turn down some much bigger ones, but I haven't lost out from coming to Northwest.
Freya plans to stay in the United States to finish her degree program at Northwest Missouri State University.
Underwriting support for All Things Northwest is provided by Nottoway County Economic Development, promoting the community, supporting business development, and growing opportunity for Northwest Missouri. The NCED Business Support Team is at your service. More at nottoway.biz.
Joining me on this segment of All Things Northwest are Nancy Greeley and Nissa Ingraham. Nancy is the superintendent at West Nottoway Schools. She has a long history in education, 32 years, classroom principal superintendent, holds 3 degrees from Northwest Missouri State University. She's also well-decorated, garnering such recognition as Distinguished Principal's Award and Outstanding New Superintendent School Award. Nissa Ingraham is a native of Northwest Missouri. Having grown up in Plattsburgh, Missouri, she studied throughout New York and into Missouri, eventually garnered her PhD from the University of Missouri. And what she's done beyond that is travel. She's traveled to the likes of Panama, Argentina, and numerous other regional and national venues to talk about teaching and research. Today, joining us on All Things Northwest, Nissa Ingraham and Nancy Greeley. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Nancy, I'll start with you first. As you think about your 32 years of experience in education and teaching and certainly supervising and really now serving as superintendent, how have you seen the field of education change from the day that you set foot in that first classroom to today?
Wow, that's a big question. Times have changed. They're constantly changing. Education is constantly changing. We are in a very mobile world. So as we prepare our students to graduate, we want them to be able to be successful whatever career they choose. The career opportunities are out there. So our goal is to make sure that every child receives a solid education that prepares them for post-secondary life skills.
And Nancy, as you look back to that first day in the classroom, was it so significantly different than it is today for a teacher or a student?
Definitely. Back in the day, we didn't have a lot of technology. I mean, there was just no computers. Now we have kids carrying around their own computer, and everything really functions and goes around the technology aspect tremendously.
And Nissa, as you think about your travels and how education has changed, not just, say, locally or regionally, but nationally and internationally, have you seen those changes keep up internationally with some of the things that Nancy's talking about, especially technology-wise?
I think the technology varies, just like it does in the United States. It varies greatly abroad and other countries as well, based on the demographics of that area. One of the things that I've noticed beyond technology, but part of it is supplemented through technology, is the birth of the standards that we have in the United States. And harking back to my beginnings in education in Texas, we didn't have standards back in those days where we were all teaching the same thing. And even Texas has a lot of unity within it, even at that time. But here in the United States now, we have our grade level expectations in the state of Missouri. We're bringing the Common Core online nationwide. And abroad, that's where I would say it's different, a great difference that I've noticed. And particularly whenever I was in Argentina, that was something that really interested the teachers found very interesting, was the fact that we were all on a scope of trying to meet the needs of all the students, but also have those conversations, and that's kind of what the standards allow us to do, is to have conversations across our demographics, across our geographical planes here in the United States, and that's not something that they're able to do in that geographical region. And also, our assessments, we now have, I remember when I was a child, we took the Iowa Test of Basic Skills, even in Plattsburgh, Missouri, but now we have our state assessment, the MAP assessment, and we're moving towards the national assessments. And again, that's something that other countries don't have. So they aren't able to have those conversations and go to the table in different geographical regions and have those conversations about best interest of children and meeting the needs of the children.
Lisa and Nancy, as you think about the classroom, not school or school district level, but I'm talking about classroom level now, what makes for a successful classroom interaction between student and teacher?
I think there's a few things, and I think that having knowledge of West Nottoway, I would say that West Nottoway embodies some of those key components, I think, that I see from having traveled in multiple areas geographically. But I think one of the key components is the school room itself needs to look engaging, be inviting, be safe. That's just a rudimentary necessity of the students, I think, but it's very, very important. And unfortunately, it does not exist everywhere. So that's a key component.
And I think another key thing for West Nottoway is, I mean, we have two things that we are very, very solid on, and that's building relationships with these kids. We have a very high free and reduced lunch percentage, and these kids need to know that people care. People want to know about them and want the best things for them. So we have really taken off and tried to build positive relationships with these kids, positive support, so they know who they can come to if they need to. And the strange thing is, even though I'm superintendent, not a day goes by when a little elementary kid doesn't come up and hug me and ask me again why I'm not over in their building all the time. And that, so that relationship means a lot to me there. Another thing, like Nissa said, that's a key for us over there that makes our school district, I feel, successful is failure's not an option. We don't give zeros. A student may get a zero if they're not at school. That's just common.
Wish I would have went to your school.
So failure's not an option. So if we see a child or a student that's at risk of failing, we intervene as quickly as we can. We give them extra support, extra time. We have before and after school tutoring, and we will average 35 to 40 kids in our small school district beyond the school day there, not only for tutoring, homework help, after-school programs. And so we're reaching out. And it says a lot to me when you see 15-year-olds walking down the hall and it's 5:30 at night and I'm going, why aren't you guys home? And this is home. I mean, this is their safe environment. So that relationship and that stability really makes makes the, a successful place for this.
And I think to kind of go off of what you were saying too, and something that I know that West Nottoway does a wonderful job of, but again, a key ingredient for any successful classroom is a relationship with the parent and with the family.
Absolutely.
Also, and fostering that so that the learning doesn't just stop at the doorway of the classroom or the doorway of the school, but it continues on with the family unit as well.
Well, and I have teachers that'll say, parents just aren't involved. They just don't care anymore. I don't think that's true. I think families today are so busy. They have such busy schedules. It's not the lack of interest in education. It's more the fact that they really don't have time. So when we do get them there and, on our campus, it's our time to shine. It's our time to sell our product. So I always tell the teachers, we as educators often sit back and don't like to brag and boast, but when you get that parent in there, that's your time to really sell what we're doing. And so we take advantage of that. And not a day goes by when we don't have something there at our school district that involves parents, whether it's a sporting event, a music concert, or family literacy nights. We hold those, every 2 weeks. So the key there is that connection, and that.
Listeners, you're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCV KRNW. I'm your host, John Jasinski, here today with Nissa Ingraham, assistant professor at Northwest Missouri State University, and Nancy Greeley, the superintendent at West Nottoway Schools. And ladies, what I think I've been hearing you say, a couple of themes. One, it's about relationships and building relationships, not just with students, but with parents. It's about the environment, the engaging learning environment, safe learning environment, high expectations. And really, Nancy, you talked about intervention and the importance thereof. I'm intrigued because as I'm listening to you talk, it occurs to me that right now in society, nationally and perhaps internationally, the views on education are interesting, I'll say. And sometimes, perhaps some people out there don't look fondly upon or don't think highly of educators, and yet I look at you two professionals and say, wow, is there any higher calling? What you do, I mean, my heart, my respect goes out to you and all of your colleagues. But talk about the state of education today from your views. Now, Nissa, you can certainly, you know, as you think about it, address it from the point of view of Argentina or Panama or right here at home at Northwest. But Nancy, I know you've been, you know, decorated with honors across superintendency and principal and teaching, so you know what's happening around the state and region, et cetera. So is education as bad as everybody thinks it is right now? Because I'll tell you what, Nancy, you're saying 15-year-olds are out there at 5:30 at night walking around and getting extra tutoring, et cetera. And, you know, that's what it's all about.
I think We are constantly compared. I mean, in the state of Missouri especially, schools are compared with one another, not only, you know, in Missouri, but also across the state, across, you know, in China, we're constantly compared. But the constant thing that I see there is every school district, no matter what, wants the same. They want quality teachers, they want strong teachers, and they want the low-achieving schools to become high-achieving schools. So that is one thing that I don't think is any different anywhere. We all share that same focus, that same goal. So in reality, I think there's a lot of different things that are thrown at us, and people compare schools from other schools, you know. And it's okay to compare us, but you've got to look at all the variables that are involved. But the one key thing is we want quality schools, we want high-achieving students.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think in the media, unfortunately, that what sells is suspenseful events that are happening and catastrophes, unfortunately. And so that's what makes the media, the front page, is the unfortunate incidences that occur within our educational system. And typically, like Nancy said, those aren't the typical events, but that's what makes the news. And that's very unfortunate for us, because I think whenever I listen to various news programs and they're talking about our teachers and our schools and our low-performing schools and how our teachers are in it for a paycheck and they're not really in it for children, I think back to our schools here in Missouri and Northwest Missouri and Kansas City, even in schools and other places in the world and the globe where I've been, and that's not the norm. And the norm is the teachers that are in it for the students. The teachers are in it to help the students become wonderful citizens of our nation and to offer them a bright future. But that's not what sells on the newspaper stands. So I think that is part of the state of our educational system, is the unfortunate incidences that sell the newspapers. But I think I agree with Nancy. Teachers are not in it for a paycheck. definitely not. We're in it to help students. We're in it to help families. We're in it to make our society a better place.
I often think about some of the critics out there and the importance of empathy. And if we had empathy and understood what a superintendent goes through on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, assistant professors, teachers in the classroom, and to understand that when you break it all down, it's really about our ability to partner with students and with families. And as we talk about partnerships, Northwest Missouri State University certainly works with rural schools, but also the whole rural school network has its own partnerships. So, Nissa, can you talk about what Northwest is doing with regard to working with rural schools and what we might do in the future. And then, Nancy, I'll ask you a kind of a similar question.
Mm-hmm. And my answer is going to kind of have something to do with Nancy also. I've been fortunate enough to take part in some of the meetings that our regional professional development centers offer for our rural consortium or our consortium of schools in this area. And that is a meeting, a time whenever our rural schools come to our campus, as well as our more urban Maryville school, come to campus and are able to share ideas and initiatives that they're doing within their school systems. And then we always try to have someone from our educational faculty at that table also to hear those discussions and take part in those discussions. And it also provides us a network whenever we try to start new initiatives within our education program. It gives us a place to go and talk to the superintendents, to the schools, about those initiatives and the likelihood of the success for those initiatives. And one of those initiatives is partnering with North Nottoway Schools this year for our Practicum 1 pilot. So we're trying to get, based on an initiative set out by DESE, set forth by DESE, we're trying to get our secondary teachers into the classrooms earlier for more quality experiences. And so we're partnering with North Nottoway this term to get our early education, our secondary education students, early opportunities in classrooms.
And you mentioned DESE, and for our listeners' sake, that's the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, just so we know. Because I know that within education, we throw out a lot of acronyms.
Yes.
And there are.
We
but,
do. All the time.
But there are also a lot of oversight entities that do, mm-hmm. you know, influence what we do mm-hmm. on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy, as you think about working with your colleagues, other rural superintendents here in Northwest Missouri, but I assume there's a Southeast Missouri Rural Superintendent Network and so on. Talk about what happens when you all come together and talk about the issues of the day.
Matter of fact, we just had a superintendent's meeting last week, and the focus just lately has been on finance. I mean, that's the superintendents are talking about. How are we going to keep our doors open, and how are we going to provide that solid education that these kids need? Because, in all honesty, a successful school does need finance. I mean, you have to have current materials. You have to have current textbooks. You have to provide the most recent and updated technology. So when superintendents sit back and talk, they talk about the finance end of it, of course, but then they also talk about, like Nissa said, DESE has come around and said, well, we want you to do this, 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 and this. And to me personally, I love it. I see it as a challenge. Go ahead, bring it on. And I will take it on, and my staff will take it on. Will we need the money? Well, some things, yeah, you will. You need the resources. You need the funding for it. However, in reality, if it's something good for kids, you're going to prioritize, and you're going to be able to do it. So when I speak that way to the other superintendents, which is probably 90% male, it's like, oh, leave it to Nancy to give us a bright side to everything. But that's my goal. I mean, if I turn around and if I'm negative about everything, it doesn't do me any good, nor does it do my building, my staff any good. And the bottom line is what's best for kids. So.
Well, there's no doubt that education's important, not just rural education, but education for all. Here at home, internationally, Nissen, you've done so much work internationally. We appreciate that. But, ladies, if you had a chance to have a little magic wand to change one or two things to help America understand, embrace, and invest in education, what are one or two changes that you might invoke?
With a magic wand. This is pretty amazing if we actually had a magic wand. Recently we had the Plohoff lecturer come on campus from Panama, and she brought with her the message of poverty and poverty within education and how poverty does impact socioeconomic status, does impact schools and students' experiences. And I think if I had a magic wand, I would take it and make it so that no child had to come to school hungry.
That's powerful. Nancy, can you top that one?
I don't know if I can top it, but if I had a magic wand, I would want every one of my kids to walk out and across that stage when they graduate from high school, knowing everything they possibly need to know in order to be successful, not only in post-secondary, but in the career, you know, workforce, whatever. That's probably my biggest thing for me. I want my kids to say, hey, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be successful in life.
Making sure they're ready to learn, making sure that hunger is not an issue so they can come in and embrace, making sure that every student walks out being successful. Very, very worthy and laudable goals. Ladies, as you think about education today and where we're at in 2013, for our listeners, as they think about the next 2 or 3 years in education, what do you see as some of the major changes as we begin to close this segment of All Things Northwest?
I think from a higher ed standpoint and allowing people to grow into wonderful teachers that will go into schools like West Nottoway, one of the more powerful changes is are the changes that are coming down from the Department of Education, or potential changes. At this point, they're still not law. But changes such as the grade point average increase expectation for the teachers. And
meaning that they
have to have a higher grade point average in order to be able to be certified. And that's not to say that I'm not trying to take away from the importance of our students being successful in their classes, definitely. However, there are some students who struggle along the way, and sometimes those students are able to reach their future students in a way that a 4.0 student who never had to struggle is able to meet their students' need. They understand the content from multiple directions and are able to explain it in multiple ways to those students. So I think there's a lot of changes that are coming down from our Department of Education that are going to influence and impact our future teachers and the teachers that we're able to produce in the state.
And Nancy, as you look ahead?
My only concern, I guess, in the future is, can we keep our doors open? I mean, these small school districts, they're giving out solid, they're producing solid products, but eventually, you know, the finances are going to run out. You know, we have had to take a step back and prioritize our needs, and one thing we made sure that we did was not to take anything away from kids. That was our focus. So as the future, you know, unfolds, I'm fearful that we are going to have to make tough decisions, and I would be fearful that some of the smaller schools will have to consolidate, close doors. And that's not always bad, but I just think we need to make sure, you know, are we doing it what's best for kids?
Well, thank you very much, Nissa Ingraham, Assistant Professor at Northwest Missouri State University, Nancy Greeley, Superintendent at West Nottoway Schools. We so much appreciate what you do on a daily basis to better the lives of our students, our families, and our communities. Thank you very much for joining us on All Things Northwest.
Thank you.
When we return, I will have some closing thoughts and welcome a special guest, Abbot Gregory Poland from Conception Abbey, who will present a message of inspiration and hope. This is All Things Northwest.
Vinnie Vaccaro graduated from Northwest Missouri State University in 1973. One thing he remembers about Northwest was the relationships he made with faculty and students.
Many of those relationships still exist today, and some of my dearest friends in life came from Northwest Missouri State, and a foundation was there for us, and it was laid, and we built the friendships on those foundations, and it's equated into some great relationships, again, both with students and with faculty that exist today, and I'll always treasure that.
Vaccaro works as a realtor in Liberty, Missouri.
Support for All Things Northwest is provided in part by the Northwest Missouri Regional Council of Governments, which offers programming, products, and services to its member governments in Atchison, Holt, Gentry, Nottoway, and Worth counties. More at nwmorcog.org.
Before we close this month's edition of All Things Northwest, I'd like to reflect on our region. This program is devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. Recently, we've been cast in not such a positive light. The story upon us of the alleged assault in Nottoway County is both sad and filled with plenty of choices and decisions that should be explored, and justice must prevail. With this being said, I'm curious as to how a community, indeed a region, can be cast in a blanketed approach by national and international media outlets. I would ask we put away the sensationalism, the focus on ratings and selling papers, and to focus on what this program intends to do. Celebrate the so many, many good people, places, events, and stories of our region. We are a community that is filled with diverse industries, hard-working and salt-of-the-earth people, a plethora of churches and parks, a diversity of cultures and ideas, an educational system focused on student development, and an unbelievably rich network of people and organizations helping their brothers and sisters in need. This has been the case for the last century and a half, was the case last month, and is the case today. Listeners, my wife Denise and I chose to move here some 27 years ago. We have raised our kids here and celebrated our region. We are proud residents, and we are humbled to serve a leadership position in the region with so many beautiful and authentic people who focus on uplifting others. And so, I choose to focus forward. Yes, I expect justice to prevail, but I will not be changed in my everyday actions as we strive to make this world a better place through education, economic growth, healthy living communities, and connections to something much larger than us. I ask our listeners to reflect on all that is good. Take some time during this Thanksgiving season and give thanks to the people and organizations around us. Let's not cast stones, but instead cast gratitude and inspire continued positive growth and hope. Let's keep focusing forward and enhancing our region for the sake of those to come after us. At this time, please welcome Abbot Gregory Poland from Conception Abbey.
When tragedy strikes the lives of a few families, it sends shockwaves through the community that trigger reactions of anger and sadness, disbelief and pain, heartache, distress and suffering. We know that the lives of several young people in our community will be forever changed. We pray for them and for their families. We also pray for guidance and truth for those who will work heroically to mediate this situation within the guidelines of the law of our land. Where do we go from here? What can we do to be part of the healing process that needs to take place in this community of good, generous, hardworking, and dedicated people? I'm reminded that on 9/11, back in 2001, Conception Abbey took to the airwaves to announce that there would be an ecumenical prayer service in the Abbey Church at 7 p.m., to which everyone was invited, and which would be followed by an opportunity for refreshments and conversation. While the prayer finished by 7:30, the conversation continued past 9:30. In a moment of tragedy and crisis, people wish to be together in order to help one another heal. I've never forgotten how difficult times carry a natural desire to be together, to encourage one another, to lift the spirits of each other. In his letter to the Galatians, St. Paul was writing to a community plagued with dissensions. His response to their situation was to remind them of the gifts that come from turning to the Spirit of God. That text reads, "The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control." In our present situation, these are hopeful and inspiring words, but we need to put flesh and blood on them. They are God's word to us, but we have to bring them to life by our deeds. First is love, a word that is too often overused and misused. But we love when we sacrifice for another. Whom can you love today, tomorrow, and the next day? Then there is peace. With whom do you need to make peace? Do you need to offer someone forgiveness? Do you need to ask someone's forgiveness for yourself? Then we have patience, a virtue that knocks at our door each day. Invite patience into your heart and see what a difference it makes. Then there comes kindness. A simple smile, a word of greeting, a compliment to someone that can make the sun shine. Next, be generous with your time and your talent. Help someone in need and do it with a smile. When it comes to faithfulness, the scriptures tell us that a faithful friend is a sturdy shield in time of trial. Let your friends see your fidelity and care for them. Then there is gentleness. When the temptation is to bark back an answer to someone, first give a smile and then a kind word, and you will not in the end need to say, "I'm sorry." Lastly is self-control. What would it mean if I were willing to control my tongue and not offer an unkind word? Really, I would be a peacemaker. The point, dear friends, is that we can only change our little corner of the world. But love, kindness, forgiveness, compassion, and gentleness are stronger forces than anger, sadness, and blame. Together, we can rebuild what seems broken at the moment, because the scriptures, where God speaks to us, show us the way, as simple and as difficult as it might seem. Let the goodness of this community shine brightly, and let us continue to pray for one another, and especially for those whose lives seem shattered. We can be God's healing presence to one another. And where shall the healing begin? Why not with me? Why not with you? Why not with us?
Thanks to Abbot Gregory Poland for his insights, leadership, and inspiration. And that's a wrap for this month's show. Friends, take good care, treat each other well, and keep celebrating and advancing our region. I'm John Jasinski, and thanks for your support of All Things Northwest, KXEV, KRNW, and Public Radio.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from Nottoway County Economic Development and Northwest Missouri Regional Council of Governments. More on Facebook at facebook.com/NWMORCOG. Theme music for the program was composed by Northwest Professor Dr. William Richardson. The music was recorded by Vocal Music Education Major Jordan Andrews, piano, Music Major Daniel Bates, bass, Audio and Production Major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. The program is written and produced by Multimedia Journalism Major Ben Noley. Join us again next month for all things Northwest.